It's time for Jason Wilde on the Homer Hour on 94.5 ESPN.
Yes, it is my time to say ESPN's track expert, Professor John Anderson, take over, please.
Wilde, are you there, bud?
So annoying. So annoying. Yes, great to be with you. And Homer listening in until he interrupts. Great to be part of the show.
Yep, okay. Just so you know, and everybody knows, I'm still waiting on your recommendations for the associate sports editor at the Missouri, and I'm sure you'll get right to that after we get off of this.
I wait till I tell you why the delay, and then when I throw my hat into the ring for real. So I'll talk about that with you later.
That'd be great. So I saw the because my students are helping me understand how this Instagram and the Twitter and thing works. So if you were asked about, I was thinking, here are the Eagles, and the Packers played them twice. First time they seemed close. Second time they were How close are they to being a team that could have knocked off the Eagles and won the NFC Championship? And the reason I ask is because I saw you tweeted or X'd or whatever a picture of Kermit the Frog looking at a map. So I'm trying to get the key. I'm trying to get the key or the legend on how far that is, the Packers, yeah, from being championship caliber.
I love maps, and I really enjoy singing. One day we'll find it. The Rainbow Connection. So that was Jen Gabe and Chewy's poll that I responded to. I do love Kermit the Frog. Not as big on Miss Piggy, more of a Fozzie guy. But look, I know Homer is ultra religious, and I try to be more like him, but it's a struggle for me as some Christians continue to ruin Christianity for me. But I did have a revelation. It was not a burning bush, but it was pretty significant. And that was this: really, really good teams don't beat themselves. And I know you're like, oh my God, this is the kind of insight that you can only get from Jason Wilde. But it's true, because here's the thing. We saw the Packers, and when they were at their best, they're a pretty damn good football team. And let's be honest, it was 16-10 in that wild card game in Philadelphia, in a game in which they'd already turned the ball over three times and then turned it over a fourth time. So it's not as if the margin is so great between them and the Eagles or the Rams and the Packers or the Lions. Look, if the Lions had stayed healthy, I do think that there is a fairly wide chasm between them and everybody else. But the devastation they had on defense, I feel sorry for them. I do. And Packers fans, I know you don't, but I do. Because that team could have been their first Super Bowl team in their franchise's history had they just had a little better luck, because all they had was bad luck, or they'd have had no luck at all. So I look at the Packers and I say, you don't do what the Chiefs do. You don't do what the Eagles do, right? I mean, the Eagles now played two of their, and I didn't see the Rams game that they won, but they beat the Packers and they beat the Commanders, and in both cases, the losing team turned the ball over four times. That's how you lose in the NFL, and sometimes you lose big, like the Commanders ended up doing, but that game was 14-12 at one point. And so the good teams don't do that. And I mentioned this to Tausch earlier in the week when we were driving back from Eau Claire from a gymnastics meet. I listened to Kevin Harlan on the call of the Chiefs divisional round win. And Houston just kept screwing up and kept screwing up. And you know I love the movie Moneyball. And what Packers opponents in the big games were able to say was, you know, what Billy Bean, played by Brad Pitt, says to his players when he's talking about making mistakes: when your enemy's making mistakes, don't interrupt them. And the Packers have to be They can't drop the football in the passing game. The differential in dropped passes, Green Bay 33 on the season. The Philadelphia Eagles, 7. 7! So, to me, it's as simple as that. And, yes, there are other things. They have to get a better pass rush. Jordan Love has to take a step. They have to figure out ways to make their running game married to their passing game better. But the biggest thing is, don't beat yourself, and then you always give yourself a chance to have a chance.
So two things, right? Bob Knight used to say smart wins, and he said sometimes the smartest thing you can do is let the other people be dumb. And the Chiefs, I don't know if you guys, these are kind of the things that just gnaw at me, even though I'm no longer doing the Sports Center every day. Of the 12 teams that won playoff games over the first 3 weeks, the Chiefs were the first team to win one of those games and have a turnover. The other 11 did not turn the ball over. The Chiefs turned it over once. It's the only team that won this postseason with even a single turnover. Like, it's just,
That's phenomenal. You should do that sort of thing for a living.
Yep. Prior to that, all 11 teams that had won had not turned the ball over, and the other ones had turned it over like a 20, 30 or whatever. If I'm doing year-end evaluations, and I always like to start positively, give me the Packer who exceeded expectations by the most.
Edgerrin Cooper. Yeah. Homer's guy. Homer's, no doubt about
Homer's
it.
Here, by the way, yeah.
Yeah, I know he's there. He's in a perfect role for him. So the thing about Cooper, and I've told this story before, but not everyone listens every day. That first game against the Eagles, like, they knew that they had something in him, but they also knew that he'd missed a bunch of time in camp. He wasn't, and not that the Wunderlich is the number one predictor of success, but they had some questions about how he was picking up the defense, and he goes into that first Eagles game and he has a tackle for loss right away, and then he misaligns, and Saquon Barkley scores a touchdown running right through the area where he was supposed to be lined up but wasn't. And so they took him out for a while, and they put him back in late in the game. So they knew that there was something there, and it was a matter of figuring out, how do we unlock this? And how do we make sure that we don't put him in positions to fail? We only put him in positions to succeed. And they did such a great job as a coaching staff of harnessing his immense talent and putting him in positions to succeed. And boy, did he. So he's got to be toward the top of the list. I would also say that even though I
Williams, can you input? Can you give us a little on Williams? I think he's overlooked.
I'm sorry, who is this? Yeah.
Williams.
I am a huge Williams guy. You're welcome. Not just because he's a former Duck. But I'll say this. From the moment I talked to him and the moment I watched him in camp, I drew the comparison to Micah Hyde, who just retired this week. And then I found out from talking to Evan that he used to watch film of Micah Hyde, and that he loved the comparison. And then Micah Hyde, who I reached out to, loved the comparison. And the bottom line is, they both had the same qualities as rookies, and that was off the charts smart and ability to process things that they were almost never out of position. And obviously Micah went on to be a multi-time All-Pro and Pro Bowler. I think one of the reasons why Evan Williams is so important is that it will allow them next season especially to be more creative with Xavier McKinney, because while it's great that he would basically take away a bunch of downfield stuff and people would avoid him, you want him to be in position to make plays. And so if you have someone like Evan Williams who can do a lot of the same things, I know McKinney loves him. I know Halfley loves him. I know Ryan Downer, the DB's coach, loves him. So he is a guy. But I wouldn't say he exceeded expectations. I mean, he probably exceeded them as a fourth-round pick, but he kind of was the guy that I was expecting. The other guy on offense that I would say exceeded expectations, and I expected a lot from him, but he was even better than I thought he was going to be, was Tucker Kraft. Like, I thought Tucker Kraft would make another big jump, But he like Neil Armstronged. I mean, that was a giant leap for mankind. And now I want to see what he does next because, you know, we were talking at locker cleanout, and he basically said, you know, I want to be George Kittle. So I want to see if he can do that because if he can, that look out. Because not only was he really good, but he played with a jacked-up shoulder all season. Like, he's tough as nails. He runs people over. He's fearless. Like, there is a lot to love with that guy. So he'd be the other guy on the list that I would think of immediately.
Can I interject for one question?
You don't have to ask to interrupt you. On your own show.
It's true. Is this about the many shades of Ireland?
No. nice. You're almost as good as Wildy. You have potential. All right. No, I think the special teams coordinator is the most overrated position in all of football. I can't believe they gave this guy an extension. All you need to do as a special teams coach is have a good field goal kicker. You can eliminate all the other positions by kicking the ball out of bounds. There's no special teams anymore if you try to eliminate it wisely other than having a good kicker, and that person doesn't decide who the kicker is.
Yeah.
Why, what's their fascination with him? Not only that, he's terrible, but even if you were good, you don't need him.
Well, I would say he hasn't been the difference maker that he was sold to us as when they hired him, right? I mean, they gave him a $2-plus million dollars a year. He's obviously done it for a really long time. He's been on Super Bowl-winning staffs. He's been on really good team staffs. But you're right. He has not – his presence alone has not tilted the field in their favor. Now, how much blame does he get for Anders Carlson versus how much blame does Goody get? I mean, Goody ultimately made the pick, but if there wasn't a pre-existing relationship with Bisaccia, does Goody pick a different kicker in that draft? I don't know. But,
yeah, probably. I don't hold that against him at all.
No, but what I'm saying is that I think you're right. Like, as long as your field goal kicker doesn't stink, and as long as you get something out of your return game occasionally, and you don't give up, say 94-yard fake return punt trickery like they did against the Bears, then the differential is not that big, right? There's hidden yardage that they can talk about, fine. But like the Packers, they finished second in the league in opponents' starting field position. Their opponents had the second worst average starting field position after kickoffs in the league. Who the heck cares about that, right? Like, that is not – like no one is saying, well, boy, I really love Rich Bisaccia because, boy, did they really put – those teams started the drives at their own 23-yard line on average. Well, with the whole new kickoff and everything else, look, the problem is they went with a rookie kicker, then they went with another rookie kicker, then they finally got Brandon McManus, who then subsequently missed one kick all year after he came on the job and then managed to miss a 38-yarder in Philly, right? So that's bad. Mm-hmm. Keyshawn Nixon, back-to-back, first-team all-pro kickoff returner. We get a new kickoff, and he is a total non-factor. There were flashes last year of Jaden Reed being a good punt returner. Pretty inconsistent catching the ball, did nothing in terms of making plays. They had one 18-yarder. So they didn't kill them, but they certainly didn't help them either. And I would assume when Rick Goslin's rankings come out, they'll be somewhere 28 to 32-ish, and it'll be, those numbers can be misleading.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think analytics should show there's no point to kicking off and returning, no point in just eliminate it. Take the 30-yard line every time, but I guess analytics
I would agree. And I would,
because if
I would,
they did, every coach would do it.
Right, and I would add quickly, because I know you got to go because you got a game coming up at Butler Fieldhouse, but I would also add that I do think, whether you like him or not, I do think Matt LaFleur really trusts Rich Bisaccia as kind of that veteran coach, the game management aspect, which we knew he was doing, but the first time I'd actually seen it mentioned was in Spoon's story yesterday. The bottom line is Matt LaFleur sees him as a consigliere that really is valuable to him. And so I don't even know if the special teams part as long as they're not abject failures, really even matters.
Yeah, I like the idea of hiring. I would pay him to be consigliere. Clearly, he does great advice in giving him on time management, late games. It doesn't matter. Whatever he does, he sucks at it. Like, now we find out he has new duties. We didn't even know. Anything that goes bad for the Packers, just assume that he's the guy behind it.
Well, maybe LaFleur didn't listen.
All right. Well, okay, that's possible. I think he would tell you, don't you think? Isn't he the kind of guy that would tell you that the head coach wouldn't listen? You don't have to answer that. That's fine.
If I have the chance to talk to him privately, yes, I don't have any doubt.
All right. Thanks, Jason.
All right, guys. Take care. Be good.
Tune in to Behind the Bucks on the Bucks Plus Audio Network, presented by Gallagher, your trusted insurance broker and HR and benefits consultant. Behind the Bucks dives deep into the Bucks and Six, a culture unknowingly created by former Bucks star Brandon Jennings. Take a look inside the Brandon Jennings story, the origin of Bucks and Six, how it became the rallying cry, what it truly means to Jennings and Bucks fans alike. Find Behind the Bucks on Bucks.com/plus, the Bucks app, and wherever you get your podcast. Behind the Bucks is presented by Gallagher. Yeah! And we'll find what the professor thinks about my logistics idea about special teams next.